Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, May 9th, 2011. I'm your humble host, PK, and I'll be with you for about the next hour discussing all the interesting events and issues of the day. As always, I'd like to thank our hosts, the suits, if you will, at bbsradio.com for helping me promote free speech and all these different ideas, free market ideas, and constitutional ideas, and keeping with my goals of liberty, property, and peace. And you can also call in here with your questions or comments, or if you care to challenge me on anything, I welcome that. The numbers are 530-413-4520 and 530-413-4511. And as you can tell, I speak quite good English, although I've been told rather snarkily that I don't have that great of a radio voice, and I don't upon listening to myself. I wish I had a better radio voice, but I got the wisdom, so I guess I'll have to deal with a voice that might be second to my wisdom and what I have to say. I'm looking forward to speaking with a friend about the issues of the day, a very interesting fellow. He's an Eastern European immigrant to this country, brilliant musician, but with an uncanny knowledge of U.S. foreign policy and the way things are in the world, the wars, the Middle East. Unlike a lot of musicians, he seems to have this sort of deep knowledge of what's going on, and I really agree with a lot of what he has to say, and practically most of what he has to say, and I try to clear up some of it and clarify some of it, because he's not an economist, although I'm a self-proclaimed economist. But anyway, and we'll be talking about music also a little later, but so his name is John, and he'll be joining us soon, and of course we'll be talking about the evil Osama bin Laden that the Navy SEALs whacked on behalf of our great leader, which was something I was totally opposed to, by the way. I was against killing Obama. They should have captured him, put him on trial in The Hague in Europe. I would much rather have seen that, but they wanted him dead because dead men tell no tales. And for the record, I do not believe that Osama bin Laden had practically anything to do with 9/11. Yes, he was. He had carried out some other tragic terrorist attempts, I think in the late 90s, but I do not believe that he was involved in 9/11 and that he is the scapegoat for it. He's the one to blame. The CIA and the government, they need their patsy, just like Oswald was the patsy for Kennedy. And James Earl Ray was the patsy for Martin Luther King and Sirhan Sirhan. And in fact, I believe that probably the FBI killed Martin Luther King, and they set up these their patsies or their puppets so that they're part of the plan, perhaps, or maybe not the direct person involved in the assassination, but they're in the loop enough where they can be blamed, and they enable these people along, as in fact the FBI has done lately with some Muslim terrorist suspects in the U.S. They'll try to further them along or incite them to do things and provide them with bombs or whatnot, even if they have triggering mechanisms that don't work. These might be people who are otherwise wouldn't do these things unless they're prodded along or rewarded by the FBI, CIA, you know, who knows? They all work together, and they are masters of deception. And speaking of deception, I've come to realize that practically every war the U.S. fought last century and the end of the 19th century were staged by the globalists of the day, and it wasn't necessary for America to go to war in these circumstances, especially not to be lied to, especially our troops not to be lied to, and the American people misled. Starting with the war, the Spanish-American War, the battleship Maine, whether it was a false flag attack or not, I'm not sure, but it wasn't set up by the Cubans or Spain. When that battleship blew up in Havana Harbor, that was an excuse for that war. And what did the U.S. do? It took Philippines from Spain, Puerto Rico, Guam, and it imposed a horrific military expedition on the Philippines that killed probably around 200,000 Filipinos. In order to free it, we made it a colony. So then you have World War One, which Wilson lied us into that. There was absolutely no reason to go into World War One, which is one of the federal government's main blunders, which led to World War Two, which led to Nazism and communism. So, okay, you have the false flag excuse for Spanish-American War, 1898, I believe. Then you have the false flag of Pearl Harbor. They had broken the Japanese code. Roosevelt was maneuvering things to get Japan to fire the first shot. And then he tried to make stooges out of the two military commanders at Pearl Harbor, who were later, I think, exonerated. And then you have the lie of the Gulf of Tonkin, which got the U.S. into Vietnam. And then, of course, 9/11, that false flag attack, which Bush helped lie us into Iraq, and which a lot of diehard Bush supporters, you know, they resent that. Sean Hannity.
Let me tell you something.
You know, this whole crowd. So, you know, and again, I'm not a socialist or a leftist of any type. I believe in liberty, property, and peace, and a true free market, free enterprise, capitalist society within the confines of a strictly limited government, constitutional republic, if you will. So that's my view, but I still condemn Bush. In fact, you know, it's funny. The diehard Bush fans, supporters, just as well as the diehard Obama supporters, they so remind me of those who went before the emperor and said, "We who are about to die salute you." And of course, those who were sent to Stalin's firing squads who said, "Long live Stalin." So go figure. I mean, that's their mentality, you know. And those who think that history is going to show that Bush was a great president, come on. He started these bailouts, this TARP stuff, his $700 billion prescription drug program, you know, his No Child Left Behind, his home ownership society, wasting billions on these ridiculous federal programs that have no constitutional authority to exist. So, you know, Bush further promotes the conservative welfare state because conservatives or Republicans, they don't mind the welfare state as long as they're running it. So it's their conservative welfare state, if you will, and which they expand. And of course, they love to expand the warfare state. So they expand the welfare warfare state. Now, Obama's expanding the welfare state primarily, but of course, the warfare state. So maybe you could say the Republicans promote the warfare welfare state and the Democrats promote the welfare warfare state. But either way, it's the one government party with two heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings. That's how I see it, and that's pretty much how it is. You're free to disagree with that assessment, but reality exists, and this country's got some serious problems, serious, serious debt, and it's not going to be changed until Congress cuts spending, which they don't have the guts to do, but I would love to do that for them. Because there's a lot of things we could chop right away. We're also going to talk tonight about this surveillance society. A few things I learned this week in some of my studying and reading. I didn't realize, yes, I know they can track you with a cell phone and, of course, cameras, toll booth cameras, all these sort of things. But there's apparently a lot more than that going on, even within your own home, that I didn't know about. So we're continuously marching to this national security state, police state, as I see it, incrementally every day. And a lot of law and order or conservative people, they seem to think that that's just fine. They don't realize it's going to come back and bite this country in the butt if it hasn't already. And, you know, these are other Americans treating us this way. It's ridiculous. So, gee, now that they got Osama, does that mean they're going to end with his TSA BS in the airports? you know, TSA, of course, standing for thousands of sexual aggressors or thousands of stupid a-holes. Hey, I think, ladies and gentlemen, I think our guest is with us. John, are you out there?
Yeah, I'm here. Who did you say got Osama?
Osama? Who got Osama?
Yeah. When?
You haven't heard?
When did they got Osama? Weekend.
Excuse me. Wait. Before we go on, I'd like to welcome you to Third Stream View.
Thank you. I thought Osama was already like a long time ago, but you know, yeah, well, yes, whatever.
Tell us. Hey, before we go on, John, would you care for some tea or coffee?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, sorry, it's self-service.
Oh, okay. Got
now,
it.
I noticed you have a rather interesting, dare I say, in a heterosexual fashion, a charming accent there. I bet that's something
okay.
the ladies really enjoy that, huh?
Well, sometimes I do. Sometimes it's kind of, you know, embarrassing, but it all depends.
Now, listen, if I was a girl, I think I would like it. It would make me curious.
You're not a girl, so that
no,
doesn't
I'm
make
not.
Life any easier.
I'm not, and I don't want to be either.
I know.
So, I don't know if you got to hear the beginning of my introduction here as I was rambling on brilliantly about things.
Were you? No, I didn't. I didn't really listen to the.
I'll do the jokes, okay?
Yeah,
John, I'll do the jokes.
Okay.
So anyway, as I've told our listeners, you originally hail from Eastern Europe.
That is very correct.
Now, yeah. when you were growing up, I'm guessing you're in your early 40s. So when you were growing up, did you have to learn Russian as a kid?
Of course.
You did. Okay.
Yeah.
And
everybody
so,
did.
Right. So you have the benefit of, if you call it that, you grew up in that society, and now you've been a U.S. citizen for I don't know how many years, many years, I think.
Many.
Yeah, and so you have an interesting take because you've seen both sides of sort of both systems, if you will.
That is correct, yeah. You can say it that way, yeah.
Thank you. And so, which has given you your own unique perspective on things.
Well, I have my own perspective, yes.
And
things
you have
that are kind of, you know, normal to everybody, but, you know, view them as certain patterns of, you know, governing and in general and everything.
Yes, and you've shared those with me. As I was telling our listeners earlier, before you joined us, not only are you a brilliant, very accomplished musician, but you have an rather interesting knowledge and fairly deep knowledge of politics and your view on how the world sort of works, especially from the U.S. Imperialistic CIA perspective, which I agree with a lot of what you have to say.
Oh, goodness.
And you probably think I'm a dangerous man, but someone's
yes,
got to
you
do
are.
It. Thank you.
Because
but someone's got to do it.
You are interfering with the status quo, and that makes you very dangerous.
Thank you. But I'm a man of peace, but I have a dangerous intellect, you might say.
I would say anything creative is dangerous to a status quo.
Anything creative or created to the status quo?
Creative is dangerous to establish status quo in the world.
Right.
Any kind of dependent thinking, it's dangerous, I would say. That's why, you know, like you're saying about music, there is a beautiful comparison, beautiful analogy in between free thinking and art. Because if you develop the appreciation for art in yourself, that any individual that does that has a broad perspective on things, starts to think intellectually, emotionally, and creatively, right?
That's true.
Why, that's why the easiest way to cut that out, that independence of thinking, is to eliminate the art from public education system. That's why we have like music programs being reduced at schools and stuff like that. No. I don't want
here
to
we go
on for any longer. I said enough already.
I didn't think you'd be going down this path, because that's really not a path that that I agree with. I don't believe that public schools should be government schools anyway, because they indoctrinate. I'd rather see private schools everywhere, especially in poor neighborhoods, unregulated and free from government control, to teach what they want to teach, which parents will decide the curriculum.
That would be the ideal, yes.
Not impossible to achieve. In fact, it used to be that way before the public school system really grew. And it also outgrew in the mid-19th century in this country. The public school system also grew as a fearful reaction against Catholic immigrants and Catholic schools.
Yeah.
But back to what you said about art, the way you just sort of described it, which I agree with. However, and unfortunately, a lot of artists are of a socialist bent or a socialist nature. And socialism and or communism, you know, especially communism, it has restricted art and artistic freedom unless it serves the state.
Yes, a lot of artists, a lot of people, they don't understand a lot of things. But, you know, that's a thing of life. You learn, maybe. You understand.
Yeah, maybe.
It's very hard to understand modern world anywhere, anyway, because it's so diverse and it's so layered now and so media controlled and everything. It's, you know.
Yeah, and like as far as music goes, you've probably heard me talk about this before, especially like what we would consider pop music. What we consider pop music today in the past was James Brown, Doobie Brothers, Earth, Wind & Fire, Rolling Stones, Beatles, all that diverse, great music. But it was great music also because it was compositionally, the writing was so good. Don't you agree?
Yes, I agree. And there is also another thing to it. And I have a kind of interesting hypothesis about that.
Well, I'll judge back if then, it's interesting, but please go ahead.
Back then, talking about 60s, 70s, especially early 80s,
right?
The artists had to go to the studios, the professional studios, to record music. So they had to be very well prepared. They had to be best of the best in order to be able to rent the studio, to pay for the session. And, you know, so they had to be kind of backed up by recording industry of those days, who believed in those artists, in the product, the artistry of it, because people were judging from what they heard and everything. So, and the overall quality, you've got tons of professionals in the business, directly involved in production, in composition, and so on. I don't say if it's not like this these days. These days it's the same. You have lots of good professionals. You've got wonderful people composing still to this day, except the digital technology that became popular and widespread in the 90s, especially, and onward, created two parallel results. The first result was the easiness that you can record the music in your home, practically, in
right.
your studio. Even not to be such a good of a performer, you can still make a good product, good sounding product, by tweaking it, putting some electronics on top, and, you know, stop just producing it well. And the second thing was the possibility of sharing. That basically killed the whole recording industry, because all of a sudden artists, instead of selling 10 million copies and making money out of it to have the creative energy juices for getting next album and everything, was selling maybe one-tenth of it, and the rest was just shared by people via Napster and the other websites. Now YouTube, you can basically download anything for free, not paying any penny for anything, and it's available to everybody in a digital form. So that created, you know, internet in general created completely new reality.
True.
Not only for music, but for virtually every industry. Something that in the human experiment called modern civilization, we don't know really where it's going to get, how long that will last, what's the result, final result of this is going to be, because, simply because, this is happening for the first time, the human civilization. Never before we had such technology, such widespread availability of things, and we practically don't know. We can't. We cannot control it. We cannot predict it or anything. It's kind of out of hand a little bit these days.
Well, it reminds me of something we say in Austrian economics, that the market is this constant discovery process.
It now, is constant discovery process, yes. But
right,
in the modern
day,
it's an investment as well. Whoever
sure.
has more money, whoever puts money into something, that thing becomes a new trend, because basically people are told what to do. And by creating those products, making them omnipresent, available everywhere in any form, you are basically being bombarded. And if you don't have the independent thinking in you, you can basically follow that kind of advertisement thing, and that's how it goes.
Well, but on the other hand, with all the availability and the possibility of home recording studios, this has broken mm-hmm. the power of the big studios where, you know, you used to have to, you know, they'd sign you for a contract. Well, now, you know, other people, talented and untalented, can produce things at home. So in a way, it's broken that lock yeah. on things.
Yeah, but instead of having 700 albums, great albums, released within a calendar year, you've got 70 million songs released in 1 year worldwide, and where 99% of it is basically very mediocre quality. So that's how it goes.
When you say mediocre
it's
quality,
it's hard to get things. You really have to be. It's almost a science these days to find something valuable.
When you mean mediocrity, are you referring to compositionally?
Yeah, I'm a musician, so in terms of I would say the overall value. It's like with any product. You've got good product, you've got so-so product, and you've got a very bad, very poor quality product, and they are basically sitting down on the same shelf. So which
but
one
that's
you
a good thing. That's a good thing, because different people with different incomes are able to afford different things that they might not able to be afford otherwise. So there's trade-offs.
Yeah. That is true, very true too.
I mean, so I don't drive the most expensive car, but I have a decent car.
Yeah. It comes and goes. It's trends and everything. So I wouldn't, you know, whatever is popular. It's because people enjoy it and they can relate to themselves, you know, having
right.
different cultural backgrounds and everything. So what I say is, these days is the availability of everything became so incredibly widespread, particularly through the internet.
Well, it's made it available to the masses, because before in history, you know, the rich people were the first people to own cars and washing machines and TV sets. But now, thanks to mass production and or miniaturization and capitalism, it's available to the masses. In fact, look at cruise ships. Cruising used to be just for the wealthy. Now it's within the grasp of regular, you know, middle income or even lower income folks.
Which is great, in my opinion. It's absolutely wonderful. You know, that's becoming, you know, so available to everybody. Of course, you know, you always have to be smart, and especially in the modern world, you have to be extra smart because you've got so many things to choose from, and how you utilize your day, how you utilize the hours available in the day is entirely up to you. And very important to not to be caught up with checking it all the time, because if you do, you may spend several hours with the media and trying to find through things, and lifespan shortens that way.
So does this mean, John, that you are extra smart?
I don't say that, but you know, I kind of watch for the stuff. You know, you mentioned those books on the market. You know, everybody is expecting like a instant gratification of, you know, instant results for everything.
Could you name one of those books?
There's a whole series of books, and I remember when I first seen it, I was like, oh my goodness, what is
Give
that
us an
about?
Example.
So then the two series of books that are kind of a joke in itself to me is the first one is Complete Idiot's Guide to, and basically you've got a guide to everything. To any kind of human activity. If you want to become, for example, a drummer, you've got a complete idiot's guide to drums. If you want to become a rocket scientist, you can have complete idiot's guide to rocket science, and so on and so forth.
The other one is the
series of yellow books for dummies. You know, so basically any dummy can become a professional within a matter of minutes, or, you know, just by studying the book for dummies.
But any dummy cannot become an intellectual radio talk show host. Thank you very much.
Oh, my goodness. It's so funny. It's just fun. Sometimes.
It is hilarious. But that is shortcuts for some people who couldn't afford to go to college or further schooling. It's handy. So again, it comes from the marketplace, and that's a good thing. But some people are idiots, and they will remain idiots.
Well, I don't
say
that.
Now, here's what I wanted to mention. This is what I want to ask you, tell you about. Talking about back to music, or like modern music. My problem is compositionally, and I'm not talking about modern, classical music or symphonic music. That's always got some depth and studying intellectual aspects of it, as does jazz. But I'm talking about pop, more like pop music now. You know, I grew up with, you know, the greatness of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Grand Funk and, yes, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, James Brown, Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, all those great bands. But it was compositionally... Where is that today? Like the writing or the level of the writing or the musicianship? Like I saw this Lady Gaga thing yesterday, this tour, and it was like, I thought it was very musically. I know she's successful. I'm not putting her down because I'm jealous that she's wealthy. I mean, she's wealthy because people vote with their money for her quote unquote product. First of all, I'm surprised Madonna's not suing her. And second, I just, you know, it basically, it doesn't grab me. It does nothing for me. So what's with the writing today, John? What is with the writing in pop music? What's happened to it? The great writing.
Well, the great writing went down the drain with the availability of, you know, of the product that you want to just sell in large quantities. So instead of being something that... And it's I don't know.
John, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones sold huge quantities. So did Chicago.
Yeah, but they were great, great songs, wonderfully put together with great lyrics.
True.
Great melodies.
What's happened to that? What's happened to melody and the greatness of that stuff? I think that rap and hip-hop has dumbed down music and musicianship.
Yes, it becomes because it's very good to dumb down. Because if you dumb down art, you dumb down the population and everything. You know, it's so good to dumb down in general, I guess. So the overall trend is for dumbing down.
Well, governments like that, and I also believe that sports is a way to dumb down too.
Of course.
Professional sports. I mean, sports is good for us to play. I could care less about professional sports. I mean, that's just me. I think it's a waste of money, and the money that they pay these players, and, you know, the billionaire owners want us, and the millionaire players want us to build them a stadium. The hell with you guys.
It's idiotic, but, you know, if you create the trend and people like it, you know, out of their basic instincts, if you support that, if you make business out of people's basic instincts, which is fighting, competition, kind of, you know, that kind of thing. So there you go. Primitive to be put it on the pedestal.
True.
That's what it is.
We have rather sort of different musical backgrounds. I know that you come from a very well studied. I know your work. I know you're brilliant, very well accomplished. You come from more of a classical background and a jazz background. Let me explain something to you. I come from the R&B background. I grew up listening to the black stations. I listened to soul music and funk and rhythm and blues. And back in the day, we looked forward to the next James Brown record or the Temptations. You know, Beatles, Rolling Stones. The next. Those great, I'm mostly talking about black music now, those great black groups, we looked forward to their next albums, and they wrote about racism, poverty, crime, hopelessness, and despair. They wrote about all those things, but they weren't glorifying it, and they weren't shooting each other. They weren't glorifying pimping and hoeing and drugs and crime and gangsterism, you know? And that's what I despise about a lot of this new, I dare I say, black music, and a lot of it coming from rap and hip hop. I mean, how often can you say bitch and ass and, you know, and other shit and make that really hip? I mean, as you know, Frank Zappa had dirty lyrics, but they were intellectual. They told a story. They were relevant to what was going on. It wasn't just for shock value. So my thing is, what's happened to, for the most part, what's happened to the greatness of black music?
There is no greatness anymore. It's just, you know, whatever gets promoted and sold in the large quantities, that's what you hear on the radio. You have to remember that all the radio stations, all the DJs are bribed by the records. It's not even companies anymore. It's more like networks of record promoters. That they go to their networks of radio stations and everything. They bribe what song becomes popular, how many times a day, how many times per hour the song needs to be played to be kind of, you know.
You think it's still that way?
After the joke and be bombarded by, you know, of course, the quality promoting drug culture, sex culture, violence. It's just, you know, what people these days want. They just want that. And the thing is that you shape the society through the arts, through the culture. Any way you want to shape the society for the future generations, it's by serving those people some kind of, it's like food and growth. You understand the analogy. I could say that intellectual and cultural analogy in between exposition, exposing people to certain things is,
right,
is the same. You, by exposing, by promoting certain things, it becomes part of the society, part of the overall culture. So if you promote, cultivate, and glorify, put on the pedestal, all those most stupid, most primitive, most vulgar things, that's how the society becomes as a result, you know, of that.
Yeah. Listen, John, I've got a question for you. I've got a email someone wrote in. I got a question for you here, John, and somebody sent me an email. Two questions. What is your favorite piano concerto, and what who is your favorite composer of the classical or romantic era? Who's your favorite piano concerto, and who's your favorite composer of the classical or romantic era?
Oh, my goodness. That is a tough question to answer because I have several.
Subjective. It's your personal subjective opinion of what you like the best. It's nothing. No one's judging you. It's like, what is your favorite, you know?
I have several compositions from romantic period. Definitely A minor by Grieg, B flat minor, Tchaikovsky's, C minor piano concerto, Rachmaninoff is great. Any of those three. And of course, Chopin, both. E minor, F minor concertos are wonderful. From romantic period.
Uh-huh.
You know, that era.
And what is your favorite piano concerto?
My personal favorite. I have several, overall, I would say one of the Bartok piano concertos. Actually, all of them.
Uh-huh.
All of them.
Interesting.
They're absolutely wonderful. Structurally, technically, harmonically, melodically, you know, everything.
Now, here's one of my questions. How do you like the way Keith Emerson and Rick Wakeman fused classical music with the progressive rock?
Oh, I think they were great. You know, they were classically trained musicians. The whole entire movement that they created, basically, and with several other bands throughout the 70s and early 80s, before it died out due to media shift. That's when the record companies were taken by the clerics, you know, and corporate people that didn't want to promote good things anymore. They just wanted to sell to the masses in quantities. So that was going on. Anyway,
John,
so, yeah, they were great. They were taking elements of classical musical composition and putting in the long forms of the popular music of those days. I would also include Genesis into it, incredible group. King Crimson,
Jethro Tull,
or UK, Bill Bruford, Earthworks, several other groups too. So.
John, is there anything new going on today? Maybe this sounds kind of funny. New in classical music, are there new composers bringing out interesting, original, classical music?
You know what? In the colleges, maybe for the composition majors, but for the mainstream, I would say it's very marginal. It's not the mainstream as it used to be before, and I will give you a wonderful example in a moment. 99% of classically composed music that we hear these days is either in movies as a soundtracks, it's embedded within or covered by Foley and stuff, sometimes it's better heard, and of course video games and stuff to some degree. Some good writing too. But classical in general, it doesn't really have much of an appeal anymore because you don't have the public that would really support it.
And what about Europe?
If I say so, well, you have to remember that the whole entire world has been incorporated. So everything that's basically all the trends that's started in this country are spreading out to the other parts of the world. So European culture is going to vanish within the next few generations, being replaced by commercialism and everything that came from here. You know, that's a process. We don't even really know what's going to turn anyway, because everything is regulated by economics and, you know.
Well, yes, John, but, you know, John, just like books, I mean, books have survived. Books are centuries old. So we have the greatness of the music you like, the greatness of the music I like, the greatness of the music we like. It's preserved mm-hmm. on record, tapes, CDs, DVDs, computers. It's preserved.
Yep. It is available to anybody. Anybody can buy, can choose in between great composition from the 1970s or
and 80s, before.
You know, or even 90s. They recorded incredible music, incredible records. And well, paying the same price, you can get some reggaeton, you know, with just beats, some vulgar words and everything. It's a personal choice.
Of course.
Of the individual. And depending what kind of culture, the overall culture the individual has been exposed to, that individual will choose what is accustomed to, I would say. So.
Right. Nobody
experienced good things in life, things of some greater value, will never pick and choose anything like this because it's foreign, you know. Just like John Lennon said back in the 70s, who would have time these days to sit down and listen to the whole entire classical composition, 25, 30 minutes, or even, you know, an hour symphony or something? It's very rare. They are just you know, not that many people that will have that kind of intellectual energy, time, and willingness to do so.
Well, here I must quote Frank Zappa. I read a great quote, Frank Zappa quote yesterday. He said, if you want to get laid, go to college. If you want an education, go to the library.
Very true.
Here's a quote, but this guy died in 1888, so maybe it's still relevant. I hope so. He says, his name was Matthew Arnold. He said, the free thinking of one age is the common sense of the next. I don't know if that applies to today.
It always applies to any time and age, you know. Because as humans, we never changed. We were essentially the same as we were 2,000 years ago in our core of the way we feel, the way we think. Of course, we didn't have gadgets. We didn't have products of things that we invented over all those years. But everything essentially is the same as it was always, you know, ever since the humanity has been developed by ourselves, shaped.
John, I just received another email, John. It's about music. He says, not only, now we only have Rush left from that era, and they are still touring and still together after 40 years.
Oh yeah, they were several bands recently. I've seen Yes on several concerts. I've seen Kansas. I went to Asia concerts. Went to, you know, concerts like that are basically played for the very specific group of listeners.
Sure.
That are coming from that age and everything. So these are small events for in the small rooms. It's not like, yes, you would have, you know, band of that quality or Genesis packing 35,000-40,000 stadium.
Right.
They wouldn't have that. They would rather play for maybe 1,500, maybe 2,000 fans that had the opportunity and luck to grow up in those years, where those great works of art were the popular music. You know,
but that's how jazz is like that, too. Jazz mostly appeals to, you know, hardcore jazz fans and musicians.
Yeah. And musicians, because it's kind of interesting. That's a form of art that was completely put together and invented, I would say, in the United States of America, on this continent.
That's
then
true.
Spread out the world, and now basically kind of fall into oblivion.
Well,
kind of interesting
you mentioned that. Yes, it is a truly American art form, as is R&B. But here's where I like to toot my own horn again and remind you. And I know you think this is a little funny, but John, I am an American who actually knows that the rest of the world knows more about America than America knows about the world.
Oh, yeah. That's very true.
So now we're going to go in a bit of a different direction now. Your take on things. You had sent me an email the other day about, you know, the war now that they got the evil Osama bin Laden.
Whom
I said earlier, don't worry, you know, I was totally against them killing him. They should have took him alive. I mean, you know, they should have put him on trial, but, you know, dead men tell no tales.
Well, maybe save taxpayers some dollars or, you know, but, you know.
Oh, please. They already spent $1 trillion in 10 years trying to find him.
No, they didn't spend trillions trying to find him. They spent trillions to try to control those poppy seeds.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the federal
growing
government.
Over Afghanistan and producing opium and heroin and everything that they
ship. Sure. But
throughout the world, you know.
You're right. our federal
that's
government. Our federal government and its military, them trying to get rid of terrorism, it's like trying to kill bees with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
And one thing I usually talk about every program, which I never shy away from, is U.S. foreign policy. That's the problem. That's why they supposedly hate us. I was laughing the day that idiot Bush says, they hate us for our freedom.
Well...
You know, there's
so much into it, you know.
Yeah, but you know, I didn't realize till the last few years how deeply the CIA is involved. Because I used to hear comments years ago, oh, CIA, CIA. And then you start seeing, well, and of course, it's all wrapped up in the flag and patriotism. But when I see what the CIA has been up to, overthrowing governments, it's infiltrated our media, our schools, our universities.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's all big business. So
Right. Whoever
makes big bucks on, you know, for example, selling weapons, that's a huge business when you think of it, Mr. PK. So,
and selling them to both sides.
Oh, yeah. The same companies are selling the weapons to our army, Pentagon. And to the terrorists and the Taliban and everything, same weapons, same companies and everything. So
they want the average Joe to think that they actually do something. In reality, nobody's really interested in winning and ending these wars.
Who wants to end the war if you make tons of money selling weapons to both sides? You would be an idiot to try to end the conflict.
The real winners are our government and big companies who bribe our politicians to keep their status quo. The war on terror and the war on drugs will go on indefinitely now.
Yes.
And, you know, some would say conspiracy theory. No, it's a grim reality.
Yeah. You're quoting.
Well, it was an email, you know, that I really liked. But
everybody kind of knows it. You know, so I talk to people every day. Sometimes we have, you know, talks. And surprisingly, you'd be surprised how many people actually are expressing saying the same thing. So probably if you made like a real, interviews with majority of people, you'll find out a lot of people think the same way, you know, but.
Well, that's true. But thanks to the internet, you know, there's more awareness of what's going on. But the sheeple the sheeple are still.
We say here, for example, it's so marginal, and we really don't, you know, we don't really count much. You know, that's for example, I'll give you a good example. Ron Paul, great politician,
my
great
hero.
Thinker. Somebody that could really make the difference. But the mass media, they will do everything to completely discredit the person, to make a joke, to make a fun out of great politician, great person, you know. Why? Because he's dangerous. So.
Because he's like me, he speaks truth to power.
Well, yeah, but you know, that's why you have to silence people like that.
Someone's got to do it, though, John. And this country, I hate the direction of where this country's going, because even with Obama, I knew it would be the same thing. This is why I didn't vote in the election, because I couldn't stand either one of them. But we're going down this path of more, you know, the national security state, more surveillance, everything. And the war on terror is a great excuse to expand state power at home and abroad.
Yeah, for example, we are monitored right now when we are speaking in.
But they can. I didn't know this. I learned this earlier in the week. They can observe you through your home computer. I guess through the speakers, through the microphone. Of course your cell phone. But the tracking. Supposedly they have infrared to see into our homes now. You know, without a warrant. There's all this kind of stuff. I wonder if they're going to extort people or intimidate people with this who are otherwise innocent.
Well, yeah. It's absolutely. So technology is there. It's just, you know, they would utilize that for the individuals that are particularly dangerous or something, you know, because it costs money, it costs the manpower to do so. For example, solving crime. If you want to solve crime, it costs money to solve crime. Don't you think so? Takes manpower, takes a lot of hours and everything.
But there's too many laws there's too many laws that shouldn't exist that create crime. Bad laws create crime. Europe had to be laughing at America when America had alcohol prohibition.
You need crime. Crime is very, very good thing. You know, can you imagine if there was no crime? It wouldn't be courts, they wouldn't be lawyers, we wouldn't have the whole entire prison system we do. Can you imagine how many people would be out of work if there was no crime?
Well, they would work, society and the economy would shift. I can envision a society with a hell of a lot less crime, maybe 90% less crime, and the people involved in law enforcement and prisons, they would morph into different technologies, different businesses if we had a free market, if we got rid of the drug war especially and all this other nonsensical stuff.
You know, but that is changing the status quo. The status quo is, you know, you need crime, you need all those things for the state to function the way it does.
Well, I'm not an anarchist. I'm a minarchist. And the state would function. It would just function differently, and there would be a lot less crime, and there would be a lot more employment and less apathy. Because with more employment, if there was no inflation, you know, there wouldn't be all this hardship and misery. So, but the government causes all this mess. And it's special interests who it supports and, you know, plays back and forth with. That's the problem.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. But, you know, that's how it is.
Does Switzerland have this problem?
I don't think it's any solution to that.
I mean, well, other countries, they don't have as much of these sort of problems. Do they, for example, Austria?
Yeah, but that is a small country.
Well,
small countries are easier to govern because you have kind of little of the population, and people are kind of working for the common goal, I would say. It's really relatively easy to organize things, to stay focused, you know. So a lot of small European countries are way ahead and everything because they have more educated societies and less diverse. As well, that's another thing. The bigger country you have to govern, the harder it becomes because it's so multi-leveled and, you know, there are so many different aspects of it.
How long have you lived in USA?
Oh, my goodness. 20 years.
And where do you see this country headed? What have you noticed? What's your honest take on things.
Ever since I came?
Especially when especially since 9/11, where do you see it headed? The economy, just the whole mindset, the whole thing. Where do you see it going?
Well, started before 9/11. Okay. Well before 9/11 with the corporate world shifting the production and shifting manufacturing and everything, all those jobs overseas and, you know, just going for the big buck for as much wealth for the small group of individuals, the smaller group of individuals that acquires all wealth, the better it is for them, worse for the nation. But that's how we are.
Well, see, I would say that a lot of that cause of that is because they're so overtaxed and overregulated, and American labor unions demanding above market wages through strikes or threats of strikes.
There's been yes, you're absolutely right. So the business and everything will go overseas because it's cheaper. So you have to always think about the bottom line as well, you know. So
what,
and the corporate world that we created in the last several, I would say 15, maybe 20 years.
So what is your What is your own political philosophy or view? Are you like of a libertarian slant? I mean, where do you find yourself? Where do you fall in line at?
You know, honestly, I'm kind of very independent person, staying completely away from it. And for those individuals that are listening to, you know, us, I can, you know, assure all of them that I'm a very, very safe person.
I know you're worried about that. I was just curious about where you stand, like, in terms of, say, economics. I mean, I believe in a free market, laissez-faire. I don't believe in corporate welfare.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if I was, you know, if I had anything to say, I would say, you know, reduce the government by 90%.
Right on.
Completely, you know, unnecessary and for anything. But then, as I said, you would have, you know, probably 2.5, maybe 3 million people out of work in one day. Just because of that, you can't do that. And, you know, so.
Well,
you know, you would have to do right way historically everything. Because right now, what we have right now is the result of the last 200-something years of, you know. So it's not like it happened overnight. It was.
No, and I've covered a lot of this in previous shows. See, I would have to fire a lot of bureaucrats and close down a lot of bureaucracies and agencies, but I would recommend those people all get their full pay and benefits for at least a year, and then in that time, there would be a great restructuring and reshifting. Companies would come back because of the massive tax cuts and the massive cuts in regulations. This country is so overregulated, it's ridiculous.
It is. But, you know, that's what I say. But you're talking about changing the system, changing the status quo. That's something that nobody really wants.
I want it.
Well, I know you do. I do, and people that think the way we do would do. But, you know.
And you know what? I am willing to, and I've said this before, I'm willing to lead the Tea Party because they need some direction.
Yeah, they need more people like Ron Paul to, you know, to be out there. But no, then again, the media will do everything to make fun of, to discredit.
Speaking of media, we need more radio hosts like PK. I've got to wind down now, John. I'd like to thank you again for coming on to Third Stream View. I enjoyed speaking with you. I hope you come back in the near future and join us again because you've got a lot of good things to say, and I especially enjoyed our chat about music and your take on things. And it's especially nice having somebody who came from, you know, wasn't born here and spent some time in their own countries before they came here. So you have that dual take on things, and it's very interesting. So I've got to wind it down now and say goodnight, and thank you so much, John. Take care. We'll talk to you soon. And to all my fans out there, I would like to say thanks again for joining me here at Third Stream View. I'll see you back here again next week, same time, same place, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central, 12 a.m. Eastern, with your wonderful, humble host here, PK. And nobody's figured out what PK stands for yet, so I'll give you all a hint. It's deep, royal, and majestic, and practically nobody but me would have the audacity to refer to himself with these two initials. So until then, we'll see you next week. Same time, same place. This is your wonderful host, PK, saying good night. Bye, everybody.